The Local Administration, Federal Affairs, and Special District Subcommittee will come to order. Tamara, please call the roll.
Chairperson Smolicka.
Here.
Representatives Amesty.
Here.
Anderson. Bartleman.
Here.
Barrera.
Here.
Staley.
Here.
Dunkley.
Here.
Gottlieb.
Here.
Griffith.
Yes, ma'am.
Hawkins.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Shock.
Here.
McLean.
Here.
Plakin.
Here.
Temple.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
Yarkowski.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. Please make sure cell phones and other communication devices, including laptops, are turned off or placed in silent mode. Well, members, today we have three bills up for consideration, as well as a presentation by OPAGA on special district performance review procedures. And without further ado, let's just jump right into the bills. We will start by taking up House Bill 359 by Representative Duggan relating to local government comprehensive plans. Representative Duggan, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill does three things. One, it provides for prevailing party attorney's fees and challenges to small-scale and expedited state review large-scale amendments, land use amendments. It resolves a split of legal authority within the state appellate system by clarifying that the statute authorizing consistency challenges to development orders, and it authorizes administrative updates to a local government CIP in specified circumstances. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Ranking Member Daly, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. If you could clarify, I know when we talked about this, you mentioned that a portion of your bill just aligns the attorney's fees, just aligns it with other types of challenges. Can you clarify that for me?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Yes, so currently under Chapter 163.3215, there is a prevailing party attorney fee provision. My bill aligns other areas of the statute of Chapter 163, 3187 and 3184, where challenges can be brought to local government approvals of comp plan amendments or comp plans to also provide for prevailing party attorney's fees.
Members, are there any additional questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Do you think this will have an unintended consequence of maybe deterring people who are like our everyday citizens from challenging something that they feel is wrong, or what would be the purpose for the fees? Because if you're the little guy, that puts you in a tough spot. And there was already a provision having to do with like silly lawsuits. So can you go into that a little bit, please?
Representative Duggan, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So the I would frame it this way, which is that there is a local government process to review these development orders, and there's multiple avenues for public input in that process that are required, right? There's required public hearings. If there were due process violations or departures from the essential requirements of the law during that process, and then somebody files a challenge, which, you know, today they'd have to file a challenge, and they would be filing the challenge against the local government, not the applicant, because they're either challenging the local government's approval or they're challenging the local government's denial, right? So they're litigating already against an entity that has endless deep pockets and is playing with other people's money. So it's already, you know, a timely, time-consuming and costly endeavor. If they allege and can prove a due process violation and departure from the essential requirements of the law, then they should prevail. And they'll get their attorney's fees under this change. But if they merely disagree with the local government's legislative decision-making, then perhaps this isn't the venue in which they should pursue that change or that challenge. Perhaps they should continue to lobby their local government officials to have a less expansive view of growth. And we're already, in Northeast Florida, we've seen that in recent elections. In Nassau County, two county commissioners lost re-election around growth issues. In St. John's County, one county commissioner recently lost re-election around past growth decisions made in the county. I think that's the appropriate forum and venue to have those discussions. If you just don't like how the county made it, the local government made its decision, that's a different issue from my rights were violated in this process. Thank you.
Members, any additional questions? Seeing none, Representative Duggan, I believe there is an amendment to the bill.
Yes, ma'am.
You are recognized to explain amendment barcode 610285.
Thank you. So that removes lines 17 through 27 of the bill, which is essentially the portion of the bill that would provide for administrative updates to the CIP under specified circumstances. We're just taking that out of the bill.
Members, are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, are there any public? Not on the amendment. We have received no public comment cards on the amendment. Is there anyone from the audience wishing to speak on the amendment? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Duggan, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
I wave close.
Members, without objection, show the amendment is adopted. And we are back on the bill as amended, and we are now in public comment. I believe we have some public comment cards on the bill as amended. Members, we have 8 public comment cards on the bill as amended. First up, Ryan Smart from the Florida Springs Council. Mr. Smart, you are recognized.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Committee. I'm Ryan Smart. I'm the Executive Director of the Florida Springs Council. I oppose this bill today for the same reason you'll hear from many of my colleagues, but I'm here from Jacksonville today to tell you a personal story. I run a very small nonprofit called the Florida Springs Council, which means I run a small business with employees and expenses. 4 years ago, 10 Florida Springs Council members filed an administrative challenge similar to the comprehensive plan challenges it issued today. We argued that the Department of Environmental Protection's Springs Water Quality Restoration Plans did not meet the minimum requirements to hold polluters accountable. The challenge was funded solely by Florida Springs Council members and local nonprofits. Last week, the First District Court of Appeals ruled in our favor, invalidating the plans and instructing DEP to draft new plans that meet the requirements of a law this body passed in 2016. The challenge took 4 years and cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars. We will receive no compensation from the state for our legal expenses, despite the fact that we were upholding a law passed by this body. In fact, we will receive no money at all for winning. All our members get is cleaner springs down the line. You might think that since I won, I would be in favor of a similar law for state agency challenges so I could have my legal fees recouped. But the truth is, we never would have filed the challenge if a law like this was in effect, even though we knew we were right, and even though we knew we could win. Because if we had lost, it would have meant the end of the business. It would have meant laying off all of my employees because we wanted to uphold your laws. Our victory proves that the legislature and local governments need nonprofits like the Florida Springs Council to enforce the rules that you create, and that is all we are doing. Without FSC's 4-year legal campaign, one of the signature pieces of water legislation ever passed in Florida would have failed because it was not properly implemented, delaying springs restoration by a decade and costing the state hundreds of millions of dollars. If you pass this bill, you will be putting an insurmountable financial barrier to nonprofits like mine, and you will be giving an advantage to only local governments and the most wealthy developers. The deck is already stacked enough against us. Please vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smart. Up next, Haley Bush, 1000 Friends of Florida. And following Ms. Bush, we'll have David Collin with the Sierra Club of Florida. Ms. Bush, you are
recognized.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Haley Bush. I'm Outreach Director for 1000 Friends of Florida. We are a statewide smart growth and environmental advocacy organization, and I'm here to ask you to vote no on House Bill 359. So for those of you with a local government background or experience in comprehensive planning, you know that comprehensive plans are critical, guiding documents for a community, and they serve as the blueprint for future growth and development. Comprehensive plans address the local economic development, transportation needs, public education needs, capital investments, infrastructure, environmental resources, and so on. Each comprehensive plan has 10 legally required elements dealing with all of those issues, and each local government has the discretion to include additional elements helping them address subjects unique to their community. So comprehensive plans are legally required to be specific with meaningful and predictable standards so that property owners know how they can use their property. Baked into this whole process are requirements for citizen engagement with community members, like the bill sponsor mentioned a few moments ago. My overall point is that local comprehensive planning is a robust, solid practice that needs to be protected, and that includes the provisions for citizen engagement in that process needs to be protected. This bill makes it so much more difficult for citizens to engage with and hold real estate developers accountable when they run afoul of the comprehensive planning process. With this bill and the threat of the losing side in development order challenges and having to pay the prevailing party attorney's fees, we are setting up a David and Goliath scenario for citizens simply seeking to uphold their community's comprehensive plan. Legal challenges are a last resort for citizens. It's not the first thing they wake up saying that they want to do. And we already have protections against frivolous claims in Florida statutes. Please vote no on this bill and protect the rights of citizens in the comprehensive planning process. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Collin, David Collin with the Sierra Club of Florida. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dave Cullen for Sierra Club, Florida. I won't belabor all of the points that have already been made. Basically, residents of communities should not be forced to accept insupportable risk in order to have access to the courts. And that's what this bill will do. Please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I have a few public comment cards here, either waving in opposition or support. If you're here and you would like to stand up and wave to the committee, we'd appreciate that. First, Alyssa Schaefer waves in opposition. Up next, Karen Woodall with Earth Justice waves in opposition. Carolyn Johnson, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waves in support. Gary Hunter, Association of Florida Community Developers, waves in support. And David Cruz, Florida League of Cities, waves in support. Is there anyone else from the audience wishing to speak on this bill? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate. Is there debate on the bill? Representative Holcomb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. By the way, the 1,000 friends of Florida, you may be more than 1,000, because I think I got 1,000 emails at least. So kudos to you on that. But as a former county commissioner, I was front and center on the front lines of these decisions. And these development decisions go through a lot of checkboxes. They are going through utilities, roads, schools, the SWIFT MUDs of the area, DEP, as a case was brought up. All of these organizations have a shot at the pie, planning and zoning commissions, and then the county commission. And we very often made changes to that development when it got to us based on the information from the citizens. Now, we never had one go to a lawsuit like this, so I will be in support of this bill, but these are difficult decisions, and a lot of cases, it's about capitalism. It's about a property owner wanting to sell his or her property to someone, and then that someone wanting to do something with it. So unless they're breaking the law, breaking a rule, which all these organizations have a shot at, it should move forward. So I appreciate your bringing the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hawkins, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to echo my colleague's comments, coming from 12 years as a county commissioner in what is the fastest growing county, I believe, in the state, in Osceola, it comes down to holding those you put in office accountable. That's where, you know, the rubber meets the road. And if it's staff-driven, then those elected officials need to bring in staff and tell them they don't agree with it and let the process start there. On the flip side, I can tell you, I just went through a barrage of social media hits because my family and I sold a piece of property that we had held for almost 30 years. And citizens mad that a developer bought it. And, you know, if you want to keep that property the same, you know, you could have wrote a bigger check is what I would say to them. You know, it's a right if people have that do investments. But it does check all the boxes and go through the whole process. But going to be up on this bill. Again, I think your comments, sir, or, as a sponsor, were spot on about the elected officials are the ones that are going to be held accountable, and that's where the citizens should start. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Ranking Member Daley, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the time that we spent together talking through this issue. I'll be honest, I do have a little bit of heartburn, but I see it from both sides, both as a former city commissioner, having sat through a number of these plans and seen some of these challenges, but also as the former corporate counsel to a developer. Right, I understand the process and how many, you know, bites at the apple that an individual who's opposed to a plan has. So I'm going to be up today, but I'd like to continue our conversation. And you've always been very open and willing to work with folks, so I look forward to having that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm also up on the bill cautiously because I'm hearing both sides, and I think that, you know, but as a lawyer, we need to find the equities. And I think that this bill does do that because if you are the prevailing party, you get your money, you know, you get that. So for the gentleman who just testified, he would have gotten them, compensated. But I like the piece where we're talking about, and I was never a municipal, so, but I think that we all have a fiduciary obligation here. And I think that that's important and that people need to hold their municipals accountable as well. And I'm seeing that the League of Cities is up on this. Again, I'm cautious about it, and I appreciate the time you took to reach out to me, contact me, and go over the bill, Chair Duggan. So I'm up on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bartleman, you're recognized.
I think you gave a really great answer to my question, and I feel I'm going to also be up today, but I do want to talk more about it with you because I am concerned because if the Springs group didn't challenge the violation, right? Even though you hold the elected officials accountable years later when they're up for re-election, that those Springs wouldn't have been protected. And I get they're afraid to challenge because there is a chance you lose and then you do go totally out of business. So I would like to sit down with you and just go over it more, and I'll be up today and see if there's a way we can finesse that language, because I do want the community to be able to hold us accountable, and the fact that they were enforcing a law that we as a legislature created, I value that. And the elected officials, you know, they can make really bad decisions, and there is no undoing that once it's passed. They can't go back when someone started a project. So I guess I want to talk to you to see if there's any other provisions we can put in there to protect this. Them, okay? Great explanation, though. Thank you. Good bill. I appreciate what you're trying to do.
Thank you.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Duggan, you know I always work with you, and I appreciate the fact that you have put a lot of work into it, but I echo the sentiment of my colleague. I don't want to repeat because you know where I stand on the bill. However, I would like to continue to work with you because I did not serve in local government, but I've worked in local government for a long time. And I know one thing about me, when it comes to local government, I like to support them. I respect home rules as well. So let's continue the conversation, even though we're going to support you, but it's a lot more work that needs to be done. Thank you.
Members, is there any further debate? Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Duggan, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that great debate. I appreciate everybody's comments on both sides of the issue. We'll definitely keep talking, but I just want to emphasize that this bill only provides for prevailing party attorney's fees to challenges to comprehensive plan amendments, right? So I very strongly suspect that in the Springs example, there are other legal bases on which challenges could be sought enforcement action can be taken, right? So this is limited to just comprehensive plan amendments, challenges, small scale and expedited state review, large scale. There's a different large scale plan amendment process called coordinated state review, which addresses situations where you might have environmentally sensitive lands. My bill does not provide for prevailing party attorney's fees. I intentionally carved that out, but I'm happy to continue those conversations. You know, the only other thing I'd like to just, I guess, observe some of the comments that were made. The first gentleman made a point of saying he's a small businessman, he employs people. Well, you got to make business judgment decisions when you run a small business. And maybe you shouldn't file the company piece of litigation. That's a business decision. With respect to a couple of the references that were made around, there's already provision for recovering your attorney's fees for frivolous claims. I suspect they're referring to a statute called numbered 57.105. In order to prevail and get your attorney's fees under that, the statute says that the losing party knew or should have known that the claim, when initially presented, was not supported by the material facts necessary to establish it or would not be supported by the application of then existing law to those material facts. That's a pretty high standard, right? So it really often would not, most of the time, apply to these situations. I mean, you can often bring a colorable claim challenging a plan amendment. This statute would not provide a basis for fees in that circumstance. So with that, I will close. Thank you.
Representative Duggan, having closed, Tamara, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Anderson? Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Staley?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Shock?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chairperson Smolicka?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. By your vote, HB 359 is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Members, our next two bills are from members on our subcommittee, and whenever you have a bill that comes before a subcommittee, as a member, feel free to either present at the podium or present at your seat. I will leave that choice up to you. Up first, we will take up HB 339 by Representative Yarkowski, relating to education of dependents of deceased or disabled service members, prisoners of war, and persons missing in action. Representative, you were fast to get up to the podium. Thank you. You are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair, Ranking Member Daly, and the committee for letting me present this bill today. This is my first bill I've presented other than a committee bill, so I'm excited to be here today, and thank you, Chair, for allowing me to do this. This is a great bill. I'm excited and honored to be able to do this. In Florida, we have a program called the Children and Spouses of Deceased and Disabled Veterans Scholarship Program, and that program affords higher education opportunities to the spouses and children of service members who have been permanently disabled or have sacrificed it all and lost their lives for our country. Currently, you just have to be a resident in Florida at the time of disability or at the time of the death of the service member in order to be afforded these opportunities. This was brought to my attention by a constituent of mine, Staff Sergeant Mike Bryant from the U.S. Army, retired out of Lake County in Claremont, where I'm from. And essentially what we have here is, as you know, we have a lot of folks moving to Florida right now, greatest state in the nation. And we have a lot of service members coming from other states that had received disability status in another state. Current law prohibits them from accessing these benefits in this program through Department of Veterans Affairs because there's no way for them to move to Florida, undo their disability status from another state, become a resident, which takes 1 year to establish tuition, in-state tuition residency, and then get your disability status again. So what we're going to do by this bill and by your vote here today is we're going to allow those service members, families, and widow and children to move here, establish residency for one year, which would allow them to, for in-state tuition, and at that point, they can then be afforded the benefits in this program, which are administered through the Department of Education. So essentially, we're adding another qualification to apply or to be eligible for this program, and that is you don't have to be here when you get your disability status, but when you move here, you must live here for 1 year, and then we open up the benefits to this program. And that has to, that goes for prisoners of war, missing persons in action, and then we identify four or five special operations missions from the 1980s and early 2000s as well that are identified in there that we carve out to those families and folks that served in those engagements. And that, Madam Chair, that is the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, Representative Yarkoski, I believe there's an amendment to this bill. You are recognized to explain amendment barcode 388043.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a technical amendment where we are just specifying the definition of a service member so that there's clarity on what that means, and that is the amendment, Madam Chair.
Members, are there questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Do we have any public comment cards on this? We have not received any public comment cards on the amendment. Is there anyone from the audience wishing to speak on the amendment? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the amendment? Representative Holcomb, you are recognized.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. As someone who is, with the Madam Chair's blessing, will be presenting three bills in from this committee, I will not be hazing my fellow freshman presenter here, but I want to thank you for the bill. I appreciate you working hard for your constituents and all the military veterans in Florida. Go Navy.
Is there any further debate on the amendment? Representative McLean, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Because it's such a serious issue, and I appreciate you bringing it forward, I do reserve my right to haze you at another time. Thank you.
Well, Representative, we will have, hopefully give you that opportunity. Any further debate on the amendment? Debate on the amendment. Representative Yarkoski, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
I waive close, Madam Chair.
Members, without objection, show the amendment is adopted. Members will turn back to the bill as amended, and we are now in public comment. We have received two public comment cards on the bill as amended. First up, we have Bob Astolos, Florida Department of Veteran Affairs. Mr. Astolos waves in support of the bill. And next up, we have Nancy Lothar with the Florida PTA, who also waves in support of the bill. Members, we are now in debate on the bill. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Woodson, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for presenting this bill to us. We are living in the United States of America, and nothing should be too much for us to do for the families of our service members, those who have given their life, those who have served. Nothing should be too much for us to do for them. They should not have to wait for a year as well to access the services that they need or the benefits that they need to experience. So thank you so much for bringing up the bill. I look forward to support you on it. And I also have a veterans bill that coming up as well. So I expect to have your support as well. Yes, I'm putting in the plug for it. But I look forward to support you on this great bill, which is we have to give back to our service members, the men who have given their life, the men and women who have given their life, also serve our country. So thank you so much.
Members, is there any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that I say this all the time. The most fundamental function of government, in my opinion, is public safety, and akin to that, equal to that, is protecting our veterans who are giving us the right to stand up here and do what we're doing today. And some of them give all. My brother's currently serving in the Air Force many years, and so it's an honor to present this, and I just want to say that the most righteous and virtuous work that I could ever do would be in this area as well as in public safety. And so I thank you again for allowing me to bring this, and I thank the members of the Department of Veterans Affairs who have been instrumental in helping me get the wording of this together, and they do great work, and it's a pleasure to get to know them more. And I thank you all for your support of this bill today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Yarkoski, having closed, Tamara, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Anderson? Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Schock?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chairpersons Malika?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, HB 339 is reported favorably. Representative, congratulations on your first favorable unanimous vote.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Next, we will take up our last bill on the agenda. We'll take up PCS for HB 383 by Representative Griffiths related to public construction. Representative Griffiths, you are recognized to explain the PCS.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. Madam Chair, thank you. Vice Chair, Ranking Member, thank you for your time today. This is H Bill 383 on public construction. H Bill 383 looks to accomplish two main things. It's to update Florida's prompt pay statute to ensure that project closeouts and final payouts happen in a timely fashion, and to increase the competitiveness on public construction projects. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the bill? Questions on the bill? See no questions. Oh. Representative Bartleman, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. Representative, thank you also for taking the time to spend with me and go over this, and I appreciate all of that. I just wanted you to explain to me why Section 7 is needed and what it does. So I'll let you go ahead and tell me a little bit about that.
Madam Chair.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. Bartleman, for the time this morning when speaking about this. Your specific question to local dollars, as I pointed out earlier, local dollars to me are essentially tax dollars as well. And to be good tax stewards at the local level, you need to have a competitive bid pricing done. And so that's why I included local into that argument.
Representative Bartleman, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. So I feel very strongly as a former city commissioner that you should, one, have local control, but then also the reason the provision is here is because it's incentivizing people from your local community to bid on projects. But commissioners and municipal elected officials could craft their ordinances so that taxpayers, you could put a provision in, for instance, that says, if it's only over 5%, then you can accept the bid from the local one. As opposed, if it's over 5, then you can go outside. And so why? My question is kind of, I'm getting to this. And I know this is my first time hearing it. I'm going to hear it again, but instead of just preempting it totally, could you craft some sort of legislation that would hold the local elected officials accountable, with a provision that's saying that you know the local preference is at this percent, or and make it a state statute, so then you don't have outliers where taxpayers are paying more for someone just so it, because it's a local preference? It's just an idea. I thought about it, and I didn't know what you thought of it, because I understand what you're trying to accomplish, but it would just give a little more flexibility. And what do you think? And you got a couple more committee stops. So thank you.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Rep. I appreciate the question again. I'm former local elected official, as you. I'm a former county commissioner. And we had local preference in our community. We had a local preference ordinance that, in theory, sounded great. In reality, after doing a deep dive, what we recognized was that it was giving an unfair advantage to those local people. And it was really discouraging those people outside the area to come in and bid on projects. Hurricane Michael exposed a lot of those problems that we had when federal dollars were rolling in and we could not use local preference. You saw very, very tight bids come in, and you recognized that there were some local communities were being taken advantage of by the local preference ordinance. And so we killed it locally, and it's been a large success, and I think it would be very successful statewide.
Members, are there any additional questions? Questions on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Griffiths, I believe there is an amendment to the PCS. You are recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. The amendment is to clarify how much the valuation on the punch list items are determined. It established the 150% of the punch list cost holdback. It clarifies that the good faith disputes must be in writing. And lastly, it clarifies that the punch list work and cost are not new, but instead are contemplated in the signed and executed contract. That is the amendment.
Members, are there questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, we will turn to public comment on the amendment. I have one public comment card on the amendment. Carrie Hebrank, the National Utility Contractors Association of Florida. Carrie Hebrank waves in support of the amendment. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to speak on the amendment? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the amendment? Representative Yarkoski, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that as a contractor, I've done tremendous work with local government, cities and counties. And I can't tell you how much grief we go through trying to get paid on stuff. We complete work. And there's just all kinds of barriers and encumbrances that seem to delay that and delay that. And, you know, we know that going into it. But I can tell you that small business, medium-sized business, the lifeline of this of our state, of our economy in a big way. So anything we can do to be moving those dollars forward, like you said, they're tax dollars. They should be appropriated. They should be set aside anyway when you win an RFP. I commend you on bringing this bill to sort of put some accountability and some structure around this so that businessmen like me can forecast, project, predict, and have, you know, cash flow, models that make sense where we actually have real information. So I like this. I think it's great. I'm not a former county commissioner, city councilman. I've not served in any government capacity until this. But as a businessman, I see the value of this. And I'm grateful that you're bringing this amendment. I think it'll do a lot of good work for businesses around the state. Thank you.
Is there any additional debate on the amendment? Debate on the amendment. Seeing none, Representative Griffiths, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive on close.
Members, without objection, show the amendment is adopted. Members will now turn back to the bill as amended, and we are in public comment. We do have a few public comment cards on the bill as amended. First up, Ms. Carrie Hebrank, National Utility Contractors Association of Florida. Carrie Hebrank waves in support. Up next, Carol Bowen, Associated Builders and Contractors of Florida. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ranking Member Daly and Representative Bartleman. I know we're from the same area of South Florida, so we've had these conversations before. I want to thank our bill sponsor. There are two parts of the bill, and there's some good news. When we're talking about that prompt pay section of the statute, I don't speak for them, but to everyone on the committee, we have very much open lines of communications with our partners from local governments, and I've said to them if there is a technical inaccuracy or if we're using procurement language from our perspective and it needs to mesh well, I think there's an open line of communication, and we've indicated a happy, you know, more than willing to address that. When it comes to that other section, Section 7, I would simply say this. Yes, we've been here before, and yes, we've had this conversation, and I appreciate the time people have spent with me on it. At the end of the day, when we put things in statute that sort of limit or scale or determine how things are bid or who can bid or what hoops need to be jumped through, they may make sense in a segment of time for a segment of a population or a goal that is being established, and we understand that. But things change and markets change, and just as we contemplate preferences and who they're benefiting, the construction market right now is insanely hot. Everybody's doing work somewhere, and if you want to work in construction on any level, you can. When the market eventually slows, and it will at some point, these silos of competition, these preferences we give to people where they can benefit in this region or this geography puts them at a competitive disadvantage down the road. There's no geography in all of Florida that can self-sustain work for everybody they're giving a preference to forever. And so as things slow, as people need to look into other regions to bid on work, they will be at a competitive disadvantage due to somebody else's local preference. And I would just ask you to think of that as we move forward. And I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Jeff Scala, Florida Association of Counties. You are recognized.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the time to discuss the bill. Jeff Scala, on behalf of the Florida Association of Counties and the 67 county members, up here to oppose this bill, again, on Section 7, as this is a modification to the definition of public works project. Right now, what local preferences do is provide an opportunity for local-owned small businesses to compete with those larger firms on these contracts. It allows them to build that book of business to then bid on some of those larger projects. So we stand firmly on that language about keeping local preferences, because the effect of this change on the definition is a full preemption on all 67 county local preferences. That would remove that $1 million threshold, and it includes when those projects are exclusively funded with local dollars. But again, we've had some great conversations with the representative and with others, other stakeholders. So we look forward to those conversations. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we have the remainder of the appearance cards are either waiving an objection or waiving in support. So I'll read through those. Jess McCarty, Miami-Dade County, waives in opposition. Devin West, Broward County, waves in opposition. Gary Hunter, Association of Florida Community Developers, waves in support. And Carolyn Johnson, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waves in support. Is there anyone else in the audience wishing to speak on this bill? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate on the bill. Is there any debate on the bill? Representative Gottlieb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We see bills like this, and kind of like the first one that we saw today, where unfortunately, as we sit in the seat, we serve many masters. And there are good portions of this bill that I like, and I'd like to be up on the preemption piece. I can't get there yet. Maybe something will be worked out moving forward, but today I'm down.
Representative Hawkins, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be where things sound good and when you're in a sitting on the dais with your fellow local officials, and I'm going to take you back to 2008 when the recession hit. We thought in Osceola County, by giving a local preference to our builders to get first rights at our projects, was the greatest thing we could do, until just the north of us, Big Orange County, said, we're going to do the same thing. Anybody that was headquartered in Osceola County could no longer get the work in Orange County. It became putting people out of business, where our contractors were coming to us saying, we know you're trying to help us, but you don't have as much work as an Orange County does. And now we are at a disadvantage. So these agreements do not work.
I think most businesses know the silos they should stay in. When you talk about bidding bigger jobs and everything, they know what they can handle, and they know how to bid that job. So going to be up on your bill. I appreciate you bringing it, and great job.
Thank you, sir.
Ranking Member Daly, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the conversations we've had on this bill. And I know that you've been working it very hard, and others have as well on both sides. And again, kind of for me, this is a very challenging bill, so thank you. I'm glad we're doing it at 11:45 in the morning. I am torn. I'm fine with the prompt payment provisions. I think there are probably a couple more tweaks, but I'm sure you'll get there. I am really struggling, as we discussed this morning, with the local preference portion. Having a background in local government, generally being a home rule guy, but I understand what you're trying to do and what you're doing on. I'm going to do the reverse of Rep. Gottlieb, and I will be softly up today in hopes of working with you and trying to make this bill better. So thank you for your time and effort.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Representative Bartleman, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. I absolutely support the prompt payment. I want to say the ABC Builders has done an amazing job explaining it over the years. As a local elected official, we were not promptly paying them, so I get that. And I am fine with that exactly how it is, okay? So my issue is, again, Section 7. So I want to offer some food for thought as you move through the committee process. Clearly, this bill is going to pass. Is that they worked 2 years ago on a compromise deal for $1 million threshold. My county has a $250,000 threshold, and I would like between like to have some discussions with you, because there is value in supporting the businesses in your local community. There is value in lifting up those people economically, and I've seen it with my own local preferences where we had a small company. He was a Dolphin player, actually. You know who I'm speaking of. And he started really small. And because he had those preferences, he was able to build his business into a huge company. And to me, he's my constituent. So that ability to empower him to do that meant a lot to me as a local elected official. What I'm going to do is, because I do owe Carol for the prompt payment, because we dealt with that forever in my district, because I do like that. I'm going to go up today, but I really, for Section 7, I would like you to please explore maybe I wasn't privy to the discussions 2 years ago, but I would love for you to sit down and maybe change that threshold to still give, because you're preempting everything now. Nobody can do anything. In your county, you actually said, forget this, I'm going to make a decision, and we're not doing this at all, which was your right as a local elected official, and you were accountable to those constituents. In my county, this is important to some people, and it's important to lift up those businesses. I'll be up today, but between now and then, can you maybe sit down again and talk about maybe amending that threshold? Because there is value on helping people prosper and helping their businesses flourish. So I would appreciate that, if that's okay. Thank you.
Members, are there any members who wish to debate? Any further debate? Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
My friend took enough time actually debating. I don't want to go into a long debate, but Rep, I would tell you that I'm willing to work with you, but today I will not be able to support you on it today, because I have gotten a lot of calls from my district as well, my county. So if you are willing to sit down and for us to work on the last item that Rep. Bartleman mentioned to you, I'll be more than happy to support you on the next committee, but today I will be down on it.
Representative Griffiths, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you. First, I'd like to thank Rep. McClain for not hazing me on my first bill. I know that was reserved for later, and so I'll be prepared for that. But I would recognize all the appreciation and the thoughts today, and so in that, I waive close.
Representative Griffiths, having closed, Tamara, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Dunkley?
No.
Gottlieb?
No.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Hawkins?
Yes.
Holcomb?
No.
Schock?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Tuck? Woodson?
No.
Yorkowski?
Yes.
Chairperson Smoleka?
Yes.
14 yeas, 4 nays.
By your vote, PCS for HB 383 is reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Griffiths, on working your first bill and moving it through its first committee stop. Members, now we have a presentation from the Office of Program Policy Analysis and Government Accountability on Special District Performance Review Procedures. CS for HB 1103 from our 2021 session requires certain special districts to engage in periodic performance reviews. Emily Leventhal, Staff Director of OPAGA, will present on behalf of OPAGA. And in order to provide sufficient time for member questions and discussion, members, I'll ask that we hold our questions until the presentation is over, and then I'll open up the meeting for questions as well as any comments from the members. Dr. Leventhal, you are recognized to proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Emily Leventhal from the Florida Legislature's OPAGA. Chairperson Smoleka, committee members, thank you so much for inviting me here today to speak about OPAGA's role in the reviews of special districts that were recently established in Florida statute. Today, I'd like to discuss the statutory scope of those reviews, talk to you about the kinds of information the research teams will be seeking from special districts, and then give you a sense of what that performance review research process will look like. Chapter 189 specifies two sets of reviews of special districts. In the first set, this is districts that have to contract with an independent entity to conduct reviews. And these include most, but not all, of the independent special fire control districts. Those reviews must be complete by June 30, 2023, and repeated every 5 years thereafter. And also, hospital districts. Those reviews must be complete by June 30, 2024, and every 5 years thereafter. But the focus of my presentation today is, of course, the reviews that OPAGA is tasked with conducting under that statute. And those include the three independent special fire control districts that are located in rural areas of opportunity. Those reviews will be complete by June 30, 2023, and every 5 years thereafter. They are located in Walton County at the Liberty and Argyle Fire Districts and in Collier County at the Immokalee Fire District. OPAGA is also required to review the 15 independent mosquito control districts and the over 50 soil and water conservation districts in the state. Now, those districts provide technical assistance to landowners and the agricultural industry in their regions. OPAGA's been directed under that statute to contract or conduct for performance reviews of special districts. And you should know that a performance review is not the same. It does not have the same focus as a financial audit. A research team will request financial statements and look at revenues and expenditures, but these reviews will focus on the efficiency and effectiveness of operations, the transparency and accountability of the special district's work, and the significance of any issues that we identify. Let me get into some details of the kinds of information we'll be seeking. So first, broadly, the statute lays out five major objectives for the reviews. And for these five reviews, special districts will have to provide information for the current fiscal year and the three previous fiscal years. I'll get into a little detail on each of these on the next few slides. So first, governance. When we talk about governance, we want to understand how a district is being run, beginning with some background on the history of the district, when they were created, information about their authority, any changes to that authority over time. Then we'll take a look at current board characteristics, and by that I mean composition, duties, vacancies. We'll evaluate district board meetings against the schedules that are required of them in their statutes. We'll look at their interactions with other government entities, the means, methods, and purpose of those interactions. To better understand special districts' performance, research teams will take a hard look at districts' goals, objectives, and activities. And by goals, we're telling special districts, tell us about those broad statements that point to where you want to go in the future, like a citizenry that's educated about Florida agriculture. Then objectives, those clear targets for specific action that support the goal, like roll out an educational activity for Florida school children on agriculture. Then we'll take a look at those activities and challenge them and say, what problems or needs is this activity addressing? What benefits do you expect to see? Are these activities being conducted and achievable within your means? Then we'll take a look at district performance from two different perspectives, internal and external. So first, internally, what measures they're holding themselves to, what formal or informal performance measures or targets do districts have? Are they meeting them? Are those measures useful to the public or to improving the district's efficiency? And then externally, what do other folks think about their performance? Have the districts assessed end user satisfaction with their services? What do the entities that routinely work with them think about their performance? For resource management, a research team will look at this from general and specific perspectives. So in general, we will get revenues and expenditures for that four-year review period that we discussed. We'll also take a look at those specific expenditures, like contracting, staffing, facilities, and equipment. We'll look at how finances affect day-to-day operations, cost reduction efforts that they take, how finances fit into their strategic plans for growth, and we'll look at whether or not they're addressing previous financial audit findings. Under services, we've broken this out into three research issues. First of all, what services are districts actually providing and how many? Then, alternatives to the status quo. Has the district ever considered what other method of service delivery, such as contracting, might make them even more efficient? Then finally, duplication. Are their services very similar to those of another entity in their region? For example, County Mosquito Control Services and a mosquito district. And if one or the other of those entities was required to absorb that duplicative service, how much would it cost? Under the law, recommendations may be part of these reviews, and the statute specifies that they must have very specific goals: improving operations, reducing costs, and reducing duplication. In the center panel of this slide, we present how an OPAGA team will lay out those recommendations. We want you to understand that those would be thoughtful and logical. As the data warrants, the research team may make recommendations to any number of entities. These may be posed as options for consideration and will include potential benefits and any adverse consequences we can anticipate related to implementing those recommendations. Next, I'll describe how the research projects will be implemented to give you a sense of what special districts will experience. First, I want to begin with current project status for each set of reviews that OPAGA is conducting. Every OPAGA review begins with a notification letter to the reviewed entity that lets them know the project is starting. And for the independent fire control districts that we're reviewing, that happened last October. Our team's been in fieldwork ever since and has visited every one of those fire districts. We don't have findings yet, but we will be producing those reports June 30, 2023. For the mosquito district reviews, last fall, OPAGA conducted a competitive procurement, and the Balmoral Group will conduct all 15 of those reviews. They began work in January 2023 and are already getting fieldwork participation even from those districts that were affected by the hurricane. For the conservation districts, OPAGA is still considering what resources we have to manage those reviews, so no decision on insourcing or outsourcing those just yet. The fieldwork for those projects should begin in late fall or early summer this year, and those reports will be complete in September 30, 2024. This slide shows the array of fieldwork that can happen in the course of an OPAGA review. All fieldwork will start with the special district and then will branch out to related stakeholders over the course of the review. It's most likely that district staff and supervisors in your regions will be involved with interviews, file or document reviews, and information requests. An OPAGA team typically makes a very large information request up front and then smaller ones over the course of the project. We may conceive of a different way to get districts' feedback before report publication, but right now we're defaulting to using a process we routinely use with every OPAGA report, which is once the field work and draft report is complete, that draft report will be presented to committee staff in the district. The district will review that report for factual errors and provide supporting documentation of any changes. They may develop a response letter. The research team, in turn, will make appropriate corrections and incorporate that response letter into the final product. All OPAGA reports are available to the public. When they're complete, they will be put on our website, either under reports or contracted reviews. And Madam Chair, that completes my prepared remarks for today. I am available to answer any questions you may have.
Well, thank you, Doctor, and thank you for that very detailed and thorough presentation on what only a performance review entails, but the process that you are currently and will continue to go through. And we appreciate the detail of the presentation and your work. Members, are there any questions for Dr. Leventhal, or are there any points that you would like to make in discussion? Representative Holcomb, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Doctor. So I just want to make sure I'm clear. So a fire control district, that would be a group of homes, a portion of the county, or what have you, that their tax dollars would go to support that, the fire assets that would be employed in that district, correct?
Dr. Leventhal, you're recognized.
Yes, fire districts are specific geographic areas within a county, and it's my understanding that the independent special fire control districts can either have a percentage millage or may issue a flat fee per home per structure.
Okay. Representative, you're recognized for a follow-up.
I just wanted to be clear because in my county, we had one, and it was a train wreck. And it took the county a long time to get records. They were supposed to say to the county each and every morning how many members are on duty. So that way the county could plan their assets accordingly because it happened to be the extreme western portion of our county on the coast. So if we're going to have assets near and around there, we needed to know. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't produce any financial reports. I could get into the tabloid stuff later, but it didn't work. And it was hard for the county to go through the research, prepare all the proper documents so we could get rid of them and prove it. Because the citizens kind of liked them because they drove around in their truck and like they did the shake hands and kiss baby stuff, but they couldn't protect them from fire or from any other emergency services. So this process will be doing a deep dive review into those fire control and mosquito control districts. So, thank you.
You're recognized.
Short answer, yes. Okay, in a different way than probably a financial audit, but what a performance, kinds of things a performance audit can unearth are accountability structures and responsiveness to accountability. And as part of that, we talk with those critical other stakeholders on fire control district reviews like county fire and sheriffs, and we get their perspective as well. Independent special fire control districts do operate under a different statute than other fire control entities, and so we see differences in performance, response, staffing qualifications.
One more follow-up.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you. I would fully support this. Hopefully the ones that are still out there are doing a really good job, and theoretically they could be doing a good job, but when you're not doing it right, it can be very wrong, especially when it comes to fire and you know, the protection of our citizens. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Woodson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation as well. My question is, OPAGA does performance reviews, right? You have finished one, and now you're in the process of conducting a review right now that you have not come up with the findings yet. What happened if from the last review there were some deficiencies that were not corrected? How does the process work?
You're recognized.
First things first, we have not finished any reviews yet, but we routinely look when we come in to review an entity at what previous reviewers have identified. So in this case, we would look at folks like the Auditor General, or we would be checking to see if the county had done a review, and we would say, what have you addressed in those financial audit findings from that review of the county, if there was one? And that is a piece of our reporting. So we do follow up on what we understand to be the findings from previous recent reviews.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. You're saying you follow up, but let's just say they have not been corrected from the follow-up. What mm-hmm. happened? Those findings, those issues.
You're recognized.
When that's happened to our teams in the past, we identify that and report that as a finding. So in the course of presenting information about a special district's overall accountability and administrative responsiveness, one of the things we would then include would be they never followed up on their financial audit findings. Those issues are still in play.
Last question.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many of those special districts have you find, let's just say, three or more findings?
You're right.
Based on those that you have evaluated that have not been corrected.
So, Representative Woodson, we haven't finished any of the reviews that we've had to complete yet. So I'm not confident that I would be able to respond to your question. I can tell you that I'm aware of financial audit findings for one of the fire districts that we're reviewing, and we are definitely considering whether or not they've implemented anything to address those findings.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ranking Member Daly, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief. Doctor, I don't have a specific question for you, but a general comment. I hope that this committee and this legislature will look to potentially expanding the scope of the different reviews that can be conducted and should be conducted when it comes to special districts. As someone who has spent the last several years working specifically with special districts, and as someone in my district in just one city, I have four special districts for just one city, which is probably a little over the top, but that's how it was done so many years ago. I've had to even go the Auditor General route on one of those districts because I think there has been there have been a lot of issues going on there. I hope that we'll continue to potentially look at expanding the scope of those districts and giving the good doctor a little bit more work in the process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Ranking Member, and for the members. While OPAGA is charged with doing a certain number of performance reviews, when it comes to the special independent fire districts, all of the districts are required to submit performance reviews this year, and OPAGA is only handling three of those due to financial constraints. Representative Dunkley, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. For education purpose, I'm asking, in regards to the reviews, I noticed on your slide where reviews to be conducted, where there's three independent fire district controls and 15 independent mosquitoes and 50 soil. So under the soil and water, and I may have missed it somewhere, I know we have to complete one by September 30th, 2024. Is there a standard, just to educate me, is there a standard as to the time frame? I know you said every 5 years, but is this the first initial one that's going to be completed?
You're recognized. The five-year recurrence is only applicable to the fire districts and the hospital districts. The soil and water conservation districts are not subject to a 5 years thereafter provision in Chapter 189. That's my understanding. And neither are the mosquito districts, I believe. So this is a one and done.
Thank you. Members, any further questions or points of discussion? Seeing none, Dr. Leventhal, thank you again for joining us this morning and being here for the presentation as well as to answer our questions. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Members, thank you again for your good work today. This concludes our meeting agenda, and we conclude early ahead of schedule. So great job. Seeing no further business before the subcommittee, Vice Chair Tuck moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.